I'm Pam Evanson.
I'm Dan Lappin, and this is Breaking Sales, a nonconformist take on rejecting the sales status quo. Join the Lappin 180 team as we break the tried and died sales tactics and techniques that are failing you and your prospects. So, did some travel this week and had lots of one-on-ones, and I think what would be good for our listeners is to kind of hear some of these live stories, these real stories, right, of how others out there are competing and how their conversations are going and where their adjustments need to be made to accelerate their conversations.
I like it.
That sound all right?
It sure does.
Here's a topic. It's really important. It's trust. So I'm going to give you a story. And I'm talking to this client that I coach, and he's really good at execution and the technical side within his space. And he's never really had like full on business development responsibilities, but he has now. And he's got such expertise, it makes sense for him to have it because there are so many people that need to speak to him. They do. But he's got to put himself out there, which he's doing. So he plans this trip to Dallas. And he's going to meet with a whole mess of potential clients / prospects. I think he's got 6 or so meetings set up. Goes down, has the trip, comes back. Him and I talk, and we do a debrief on how the trip went. And he goes, well, it was good. He goes, the one thing, though, that I was a little bit disappointed in, and he knows about attachment and all that, but he's being honest, you know, is simple that I didn't really get any transitions or conversions. I didn't really get any flow or commitments from those conversations. And he goes, and, you know, I did go down managing my expectations. And he talked to me about that. He goes, I did go down working on my mindset, no good or bad. And I did go down with some ideas about some questions I wanted to ask. But coming away from it now, it's like, okay, I'm a little disappointed that I didn't get anybody asking for another meeting out of the 6. I said, okay, so how did the meetings go? And he goes, they went pretty good. I learned quite a bit. I go, what did you learn? What did you learn about? And he says, well, I learned a lot about like how they do their strategies. And I learned a lot about, you know, what they're looking forward to this year and what they're concerned about this year. So, you know, I could tell he did some good questions. I go, okay, did you have any kind of upfront agreement with them though? Because his biggest complaint was that it seemed like he was like trying to pry them. Like he was getting surface level answers. He was getting a lot of like, just, you know, cautious answers that had no depth in them. And so I said, all right, did you do an upfront agreement? He goes, well, I kind of did. And I go, well, what's kind of? And he was like, well, you know, I set the tone of the meeting. I go, did you give them the out? And he goes, no. I go, all right, listen, there's a lot of reasons why sometimes a conversation doesn't convert. All right. And we can talk about that. But one of the main reasons that you probably experienced what you experienced is simply they didn't understand or trust the intent of your questions or where you were trying to take the conversation.
I agree.
And so we got to start there. My gut is if there's 6 of them, probably a good 2 or 3, maybe even as many as 4 of them, just really did not trust where you were going.
Do you remember, Dan, about, I think maybe it was 2019, Harvard Business Journal produced that article that said the number one way you can start to demonstrate to another human being who has no working knowledge of you that you can be trusted is to demonstrate that you don't need to benefit from the conversation. You don't need to gain anything from the conversation. And the out piece of that is the most powerful way you can truly demonstrate to somebody, I don't need anything from this. Yet the one thing I continue to hear about why I don't, you know, a salesperson will say why I don't necessarily use the upfront agreement. I still don't believe that. I don't believe that I'm not looking to gain something from this conversation. And number two, they know why I'm there, Pam. So it seems a little bit tongue in cheek to tell them I don't need anything from this conversation when we both know we're sitting down to talk business. And I understand the conflict, but my goodness, to really harness what it means to demonstrate to somebody through your words and what you're communicating that you can be trusted out of the gate, I think moving forward in the business environment is going to be something that everybody has to truly start to internalize and believe.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember the article and other research that I've done on this concept of trust. And you and I have talked for years about even the psychology around asking and receiving questions. It's all about trust, right? And I was in a workshop this week, and after about an hour in, I asked the entire group, all right, when I'm asking you questions and you've met me for the past hour, what's going through your head? And all of them were like, well, not the answer. I go, well, what is going through your head? Where is Dan taking us? How's he going to use my answer? Is he going to judge it? What's he looking for? I said, exactly. I said, who else do you think does that? Prospects, clients. I said, yes. So what are you doing to try to minimize it when you know innately human nature, every prospect you're ever going to sit down with, every single one of them to some degree, even the ones you refer to, they're going to be cautious because they're innately trying to figure out how is this conversation going to help them or harm them. And as a part of that, they're trying to figure out where are you going? What are you looking for? What's your intent?
And Dan, I think, you know, we all in sales at some point in our life labeled how good a meeting was by how we got that meeting. So everybody says, right, if there's no working knowledge of one another, it's like the worst meeting. But the golden goose of meetings is when you're referred in to somebody who has a level of pain and is asked for a recommendation. Everybody thinks that's the golden goose of meetings. I'm referred into a company by somebody who already trusts me, and this company is already experiencing a level of pain in what I do for a living. And we all think that's the golden goose of meetings. I double down on my upfront agreement during those types of meetings when we're referred in by somebody who trusts us. I double down on it. Dan, I just because I was introduced to you via John Doe, please know. No expectations because of that. And it's amazing, Dan. I feel like I get a better response. They're there because they do have pain, and they're only talking to me because I've been referred in by someone who trusts me. And I think it's so important. They know there's a level of expectation, and I want them to know there actually isn't any. And just because I was referred in by somebody who already trusts the work that I do, I am not, there is no expectations because of that. Let's just take that off the table. It's meaningless. It's more important to refine and hone your upfront agreement.
So here's another funny example before we dive more into this upfront agreement. I agree with you 100%. But look at it this way too. I mean, as our listeners are listening, right? I don't know what everybody's hobbies are, right? But this has happened a couple times this week on this topic. If you're a golfer, right, you probably like certain types of golf balls, right? If you're a runner, you like certain types of sneakers. I've talked to some hockey players, right? Certain types of skates or a certain type of stick, right? We have these preferences. So I was talking to this one individual about sneakers, and he, I think, runs with Asics. And I said, all right, let's imagine this. You meet someone who is a Nike sales representative. And they start talking to you. And within that conversation, they start positioning the new technology that Nike has to offer in their sneakers. Are you listening? He's like, absolutely not. I go, how come? He goes, because I love ASICs. I go, all right. Why else? He goes, well, I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to get me to use his sneakers. I go, fair enough. So you have biases already in place. He goes, absolutely. And I said, number two, right? You don't want to be sold to. And no one's going to tell you anything different in that moment in time based on your experiences with ASICs. He's like, absolutely. I go, okay. I said, what if that person approached you though, and you could tell they weren't trying to get you to use Nike, and they were genuinely in a conversation with you, asking you questions about your experience with your ASICs, what you found interesting about them, what you liked. They even wanted to hear about some of your successful experiences with them. And toward the end of the conversation, would you be open more to having a discussion or at least listening to the Nike sneaker? And he paused and he goes, yeah, actually, yeah, I probably would. I go, what's the difference? He goes, well, the other person sought to understand me. The other person took the time to get to know what my experience was with what I'm currently doing. And I didn't feel like they were trying to push the sneaker on me. I go, okay, that's what an upfront agreement starts to do.
I think it's important too. We know there's several different types of first meetings, and I am getting really honed in with my clients on, was that meeting willing to explore? Okay. The prospect didn't ask me with you for any reason. You are the one who asked them to engage. You are the one that asked them for a conversation. That's a very different upfront agreement than the, hey, there's a reason we're talking to others. Something has gone bump in the night and we're open to talking to others. That's a very different upfront agreement. So like, I'm even getting very, very detailed with my clients on the differences of the upfront agreement based on how that first meeting was derived. And I think that opens up a whole world around your ability to truly advise versus sell.
So yeah, Pam, literally I can think of six or seven different, very common, but very powerful and needed ways that you could originate the conversation through an upfront agreement. I think we even cover those, all of them, in our online courses. So you're spot on. It's just not one size fits all. No.
No. And to our clients, if you're listening to this, you want to be high performance, you want to work towards elite, you better be developing that authentic version of your upfront agreement for each one of those different style of meetings. It can't be a one size fits all. I agree. But I just wonder how many folks are really doing the hard work to separate the type of meeting and the upfront agreement that correlates with the type of meeting that you're having, so you can really hit home that I'm somebody that you can trust, regardless of how well we know each other. I'm somebody that you can trust in this business dynamic right now.
So here's the conflict, Pam, on this whole thing. I understand the upfront agreement is different because I always hear the complaint. I get it, Dan. It makes such sense. It just feels robotic. And I'm like, okay, so how many times have you practiced it? Well, I really haven't. It's always going to feel robotic until you commit as a skill set, because that's your job. Your job is to go out and meet these people, hunt them down. I get it. That's the old terminology. But your job is to do the outreach, connect with these people, open up the door for a conversation. But your job doesn't end there. Your job is also, it is your job to create a conversation where the other person can feel safe.
I heard this the other day. Pam, I disagree. There are some people that absolutely want to be sold to. They absolutely want to be sold to. How would you respond to that, Dan? If I told you, Pam, I completely disagree that people do not want to be sold to. I think right now, in this heightened environment, there's a lot of people that want to be sold to. They want you to sell them.
So my first response, Pam, is I don't believe in this bullshit of a heightened environment. I've been hearing the term heightened environment now for 10 years. It seems like every year there's a new heightened environment. I don't buy into it. It's just the environment, right? Period. Right. So I've heard some of my clients say the same thing. And I'm like, no, there's nothing heightened. Okay. It's just an environment. Two, no, people don't want to be sold to. People, though, want options when they've already decided that they're ready and willing to make a change. And they've already decided that they're willing to listen to what those options are. It's not about being sold to, right? It's about when we get to the point as human beings where we've like, okay, you know what? I need to change my path here. I need to improve this. I need to do something different. We can't keep having these types of results. We need to get better. Whenever we get to that thought process, that moment in time, that is when we become much more open to actually listening, debating, and evaluating options for change. So we get into this learning mode where we're willing to be educated, we're willing to learn, we're willing to listen. It has nothing to do with being sold.
I like that distinction. All right, how would you respond to this, Pam? Sometimes I feel like the upfront agreement may indicate, because I've gotten this feedback, Pam, we just didn't feel you wanted it as badly as the others did.
You know, Pam, I've actually heard that too. And I just don't make the connection. Maybe I'd like your opinion on that. I don't make the connection. An upfront agreement is when you set the tone with someone. Hey, I want to make sure that we still have 45 minutes today. Great. Got it. Is there anything you'd like to get out of today's conversation? Great. Got it. Well, as we start moving into this conversation, I would appreciate 10 or 15 minutes or maybe 20 learning a little bit more about your business. I've done all the research and all that, but I'd like to hear from you. What are the things that are important to you? Then, if and when appropriate, I'm happy to share a little bit more about Lapin 180. And as you all know, right, toward the end of this conversation today, we'll come to this moment in time where we have to make a decision. Is there a reason for us to continue talking? Or maybe not. I want to let you know I'm okay either way. I understand sometimes not talking, that happens, right? That's an upfront agreement. May not have been my best, but it felt natural to me at this moment in time on the call. But at the same time, right, that's got nothing to do with not wanting it. That's got nothing to do with, right, not having an interest to genuinely determine, can you help this company? And do they want your help? Are they ready for your help? The only thing that upfront agreement does is says, hey, listen, I'm here to learn. I'm here to talk. But neither one of us are on the hook. So let's just have a regular conversation. Let's dive into it. See where we end up. We may end up somewhere. We may end up not. Now, Pam, I'm going to open up. Am I looking at that wrong?
No. What I think happens when you hear the, I just don't know that you wanted it as bad as the others. And you know how I feel about this, Dan. I don't think anybody will ever view you as their advisor if they don't see you as a peer. And I feel like the upfront agreement establishes you as somebody's peer out of the gate. I don't want to be in a dynamic where I'm here and my client is here. I want to be in a dynamic where we're peers. And so I think a lot of times those folks that say, I just didn't feel like you wanted it bad enough, they're not looking for a peer-to-peer relationship. They are looking for that the client is up here and the salesperson is down here. And that's just not a dynamic I want to be in. And so for me, it's all about, not only does it establish I can be trusted, it also establishes I'm a peer of yours. And I can be very realistic about the sense that this engagement may not make sense for either one of us based on what we learned today. So for me, when I hear that, it just tells me that person, that prospect, isn't necessarily looking for a peer-to-peer relationship. And that's okay. But I definitely want to be on a peer-to-peer relationship, especially being tasked with the responsibility that we have. It's important that we're seen as peers.
I like the way you said that, and I thought that was extremely relevant. If anything, right, I would agree with you that that would be outside of the trust factor, 1A and 1B, as to the reason why you would bother practicing and developing your own style and wording around an upfront agreement because of that peer-to-peer.
I'm not a needy salesperson who's going to do whatever it takes to win your business. I'm here as a peer to figure out how and if I can help your business. And I'm realistic enough to understand that I might not be able to help, it may not be wanted, and there may not be a good fit between us. So I also like the peer-to-peer dynamic that the upfront agreement allows.
Yeah, 100%. And for our listeners, it's the easiest thing you could get good at that represents your high-performance mindset. It's one of the easiest things. It's a no-brainer.
What do we say all the time? It takes practice over and over again to find your authentic words.
So funny story, Pam. So recently, in the past 60 days, I've actually used an upfront agreement on my children. Now, my kids are getting, as you know, are getting older. But I knew I had to sit down and have a conversation with one of my kids. And I used an upfront agreement. I said, listen, I get it. You're in the midst of this experience that you're having. I understand. And so I know that you're going to want to figure that experience out for yourself. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I am here to maybe help you set up parameters, but you set those parameters up if you choose. And then I said, listen, and when we're done, if you decide that you don't want to listen and that I had nothing of value to offer and you're going to do it your way, that's your decision to make. And actually, the conversation went very well, a lot better than it usually does.
I think my family would love it if I used an upfront agreement. I am here's how it's going to go down, folks.
Oh, yeah. Because we as parents, we see the writing on the wall. We know what our kids are going to experience. We know exactly, okay, you know, A is going to equal B. Then we're going to get the C, D, and E, all right? And we're trying to help them avoid E, whatever E is, right? Ironically, E stands right for experience, right? But whatever that might be. But as parents, right, we know it doesn't work that way.
Sure doesn't.
You got to give them the chance to feel like, here's the key word, safe. That's what I recognized in the conversation with my child.
But to your point, humans are humans. So,
by using the upfront agreement, I allowed them to feel like they were in control and they were safe. And it changed how they listened to me. It's the same with your prospects. You're going to see it. Allow them to feel like they are in control. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, they are anyway.
They will feel safe. And the safer they feel, the more likely they are to invest the time and energy to be more authentic and genuine in your conversation.
Agreed. I think back to your original point and how we started this. You do have to believe. You have to believe that it is your role to provide the safe space, that it is not your role to convince, persuade, and judge. It's not your role to ask questions to position your solutions. It's not your role to find somebody's pain. Oh my gosh, I don't think I told you this, Dan. I was on a flight not too long ago, and I think he was a general counsel, but he went at me when he found out I was a sales coach. He said, "Who ever thought it was a good idea to try to find somebody's pain?" Over and over and over again in the conversation. He said, "Who thinks that feels good?" So you do have to believe that that is your role. And so it does start with that mindset shift. And if you don't believe it, it will always feel awkward. It will always feel like a tactic. And you won't establish yourself as somebody who can be trusted. And you certainly won't position yourself as a peer.
And it has all of those things that you just mentioned have a direct correlation with the trust that's built in that conversation and any kind of likelihood for continued exploration.
Yeah. Driving some momentum around, maybe I should invest some time in thinking through this a little bit more.
Love that story, Pam. I wish I would have been a fly on the wall for you on the plane listening to that guy talk about pain, because I'm sure you'd have been right there with him.
I got a lot of them. I got a lot of them.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Sales. If you want to get engaged with us outside of the podcast, be sure to go to our website, lapin180.com. Go to contact us. You can also engage with us on LinkedIn at Dan Lapin or Lapin180.